Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by NatureBox. What do you do when you want a snack, but all you can find is junk food? You have to rely on your self-control. Don't do it. Don't make an alliance with self-control, because self-control will blindside you every single time. They will scheme and plot. It will scheme and plot too much to make sure that you do eat that junk food. So start snacking healthy with an alliance you can trust. That's with NatureBox, because NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you. They're created with high quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, and sweeteners, so you can finally feel great about snacking. My personal favorites are, of course, the Dark Cocoa Nom Noms and the Pistachio Power Clusters, even better than Trust Clusters. And NatureBox has recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase required, and cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com and check out the entire snack catalog. Over 100 snacks there to choose from, and they're constantly adding new snacks. Choose the snacks you want, and they deliver them right to your door. With NatureBox, you'll never get bored. New snacks every month, inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. So right now, you'll save even more. NatureBox is offering RHAP listeners 50% off their first order when you go to naturebox.com/RHAP. naturebox.com/RHAP. 50% off your first order. Get some healthier snacks for the new year at naturebox.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a very special edition, a season wrap-up of Why Blank Lost, as we talk about why Adam Klein won Survivor with the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good. How are you?
David, I'm okay. Apparently, I have lost my voice over the weekend after a long season of podcasting. I think this is like the podcasting equivalent of when Pascal had to be medevaced from the jury after he was already out of the game. My voice got me through a very long 2016, but then I think just collapsed from exhaustion at the end of this podcasting season. So I do apologize for what I sound like right now. Hopefully I will bounce back very soon.
Well, I have great confidence in you, in your ability to bounce back.
Yes. And luckily, anybody who listens to this podcast knows the majority of the talking on this show is done by David Bloomberg. So I feel like if there was any show that I was going to be in rough shape for, I felt like that this is probably one just to tough it out.
Well, you know, and here I was going to make it all interactive and ask you questions, but I'll just take it on myself.
Well, David, I trust you to be able to help us bring it home for why Adam won. So did you enjoy the Survivor Millennials versus Gen X finale?
I did. It was a great finale, a good cap to a great season. But yeah, wait, hold on. I'm hearing something in my audio here. What is that? It sounds like pagong, pagong.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I just have to say that things worked out. Things worked out the way I thought they would in terms of that aspect of the game.
Heartiest congratulations, gang.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I do also have to say I stand firmly with Brett in not wanting to hear about trust clusters and voting blocks and swirling changes in allies, because it was a solid alliance taking it to the end until those allies had to turn on each other.
Yes. For that part of the equation, we can say,
David, you're right. David, you're right.
But as far as your winner picks go from last week's show, we don't need to revisit that.
Well, you know, I might have picked David, but we knew that it was a tough one. It just, the way things happened, some of it was, you know, the way we expected, I think both of us, and some wasn't. I think last week I had said Jay or Brett would be next, depending on who wins immunity. So, of course, it was Jay and then Brett. You know, I said at the time last week that I didn't see how Hannah could win up against almost anyone. I even suggested last week the question, was Hannah trying to come alive in the final tribal council to talk about all the huge moves she's made and how she secretly controlled the game? And well, that actually is kind of what happened. It didn't work as well in North America as it perhaps did in other locations around the world.
So I hear.
I said I didn't see how Ken could win. And, you know, obviously right about that. And while I didn't predict Adam would win, I did say The only way I can see Adam winning is by removing both David and Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, I didn't think he could do it, but that's because I thought Ken would never flip. So, you know, surprise to all of us there.
Okay. So how do you want to handle the task for today to discuss how Adam won, but also how everybody else lost?
I think we'll do it all as one group. In the past finales, we've done it a couple of different ways. But in this case, everybody is so linked together when you look at it. So, for example, you know, there's the question of why did they vote out Brett instead of David? Well, that plays into also why Adam ended up winning instead of Hannah, for example. And we'll see that there is an overriding theme to this whole season, really, but especially this finale.
Okay, so where do you want to start?
I think we start with the question, what happened here to cause Adam to win, to cause Ken and Hannah to get shut out, and not to mention what happened to Jay, Brett, and David, who didn't even make it that far. So we'll go through our normal path, starting with rule number one, and we will figure out why Adam won.
So why did Adam win? Because he had the story about his mom, right?
No. Don't even start with that.
I'm joking, David.
I know. It triggers me.
Sorry.
We'll start with rule number one. And it is the most important, as we'll see. And people should buckle up here, because rule number one, it's gonna be a big one here. Last week I said, it seems to me that just about everybody left on this season knows they have to scheme and plot, with Ken being the possible exception. And, you know, we saw that certainly seems to have been the case. Time after time after time in the Jury Speaks videos. So these are the videos that came out after the finale. They don't have a whole lot of web confessionals and things after the finale, but they do have each juror saying why they're going to vote the way they're going to vote. Mm. And they usually try historically to keep it kind of coy. These were not coy. Each one started out by saying, well, you know, I could vote for one person or I could vote for another. But by the end of it, you knew exactly how they were going to vote. So time after time in these videos, each juror said strategy or scheming and plotting was the most important factor in the game, just as I've always said. They hammered it home time and time again. I don't think I've ever seen such a united front from a jury. Since it was such an important factor, we'll obviously start by talking about Adam. I think it's pretty clear that he knew of the need to scheme and plot, and he certainly put it into action. He was gaming from the very beginning. Now, we know that not every plot worked, and Adam himself admitted in interviews that he made some mistakes along the way, but he was out there giving it the old college try.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept on recovering well each time something went wrong. The jurors would certainly agree with him there. On know-it-alls, Sophie said Adam had nobody to rely on and made moves every day. Quite frankly, it's like she had seen the Jury Speaks videos before they were even posted, because that's very much in line with what the jurors said there.
She's that good.
She is that good. You better watch it. She could just, you know, jump in and take your position permanently.
Yeah, I could be the new coach. Drop your stack of podcasts.
Well, at least you know, if by chance you were to lose your voice in the future, you have someone else who can jump in there. So besides the jury votes videos, Adam talked in interviews and discussed some of this as well. He said that his alliance, and I want to emphasize that word, alliance of David, Jessica, Ken, Hannah, and at one point Zeke, they were his six. When Zeke switched sides and wanted Adam to do so as well, Adam refused to turn on his allies. So much for swirling voting box and trust clusters once again.
Mm-hmm.
Adam stayed loyal as long as he needed to, all the while talking to those on the other side of the divide in order to keep the lines of communication open and maintain the ability to switch if and when the time was right. He also made some side alliances, such as one with Brett to help keep each other informed and ensure that if one or the other's names got mentioned, it was pushed back down as much as possible. Now, we didn't really know about that through most of the game, but we saw the result of it in the finale when Adam tried to save Brett by voting out David. That plan, of course, was one that didn't quite work the way, you know, they had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
But even though it didn't work, it did work well enough for the jury. They wanted to see someone take action to remove David from the game, and Adam attempted to take that action. Many of the jurors said in their Jury Speaks videos that from the moment he attempted that, he rose to the top of their list of those they would vote for. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to give you some statements from the Jury Speaks videos because they help to highlight Adam's strengths in this regard. Sunday said Adam was really good about collaborating and bringing together people and information from two different alliances when they didn't even necessarily realize it. Brett said Adam was always trying to play the game. I'm not going to say he had the best game, but he was constantly thinking, he was constantly making moves. Taylor said Adam attempted to make a lot of moves. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. He was on the bottom from the very beginning, and he lived to tell the tale by working his way into every crack. Zeke said the person who played the best strategic game should win. That's the person who took the most risks and who took a leadership role in direction and strategy in the game. David said his voting criteria came down to who played the best game. To him, there was really only one name. Adam came in playing hard, making big moves, finding idols, winning an immunity challenge, and presenting coherent arguments while plotting and scheming. Jessica said Adam was never in a position where he was a leader, but he was trying to make things happen and make moves, and he was involved in a lot of moves, whether they worked or not. Will said Adam didn't always have his plans work, but his strategy was sound and people should have listened to him. He made it to the end on his own merit without relying on others. Jay said Adam worked his way through different alliances and found a way to get the vote off him. His name rarely came up. He worked in the shadows and kept big threats until he didn't need them. And Chris said Adam was scrapping and fighting and tore everyone up in arguments at tribal council. And that was the earlier tribal councils, not the final one. So you see all the jurors were thinking Adam truly succeeded in the strategy portion of the game. And there was even more than that, because the way Adam handled the reward steal advantage, I think also deserves mention. I brought up a few weeks ago that he had a web confessional talking about how he played it without playing it at the family visit. But it went even beyond that. We didn't see anything on the show about him recognizing it for the disadvantage we all knew it truly could have been. But in his post-game CBS interview, he said flat out that he knew right away it had the potential to be a huge disadvantage, and he spent a lot of time thinking about how to use it. He solved that in the way we saw, earning goodwill and turning it into a true advantage. It takes a very savvy player to figure that out, and I think in other hands, that advantage truly would have turned into a disadvantage. So, you know, again, props to Survivor for putting this there when a lot of people pointed to it and said, oh my God, that's a horrible advantage. It depends how it's used. It depends on what player gets it. And Adam was able to turn that around. So that just adds on to the great job of plotting and scheming that Adam did. Mm-hmm. From here, we can start to move on to the other players. You and Josh mentioned on the voicemail show that although Hannah and Ken tied with zero votes, you both essentially considered Hannah to have come in second place. And I'll talk about her in a similar position here, especially since she clearly followed this rule better than Ken did.
Although I talked to my brother yesterday who watched this season of Survivor for the first time in a few years. So I guess you could consider him to be the most casual of casuals. And he said he thought Ken should have won.
Oh my.
Yeah. So just putting that out there.
And why did he think Ken?
Well, he was happy that Adam won because he met Adam at the Live Know-It-Alls, but he liked that Ken was good in the challenges.
Okay. So is your brother a big Ozzy fan then too?
He doesn't know who Ozzy is. He's that casual.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. That is casual.
Yeah.
Well, even if we go by he was good in the challenges, that's still, you know, we're still talking about plotting and scheming. So I think I'll still deal with Hannah first.
Okay.
Hannah is an interesting person to talk about in terms of strategy because she had a very different story of her game in her own mind compared to the story the jurors believed. So Hannah said in a web confessional before Final Tribal Council that she created the jury. She was responsible for them being there. She played really hard and didn't just goat her way to the end. Every guy who talked down to her, she used the information that they gave her against them. She maneuvered her way with people she wanted to sit with. But clearly that's not the story that the jury thought was happening. When I watched the Jury Speaks videos, almost every single juror had the same opinion of Hannah and Ken, and it wasn't a good one. Mm-hmm. Taylor and Brett said flat out that both of them were goats. Others said similar things. Other sources of mine have also privately told me the jury did not like Hannah, and she never had a chance going into Final Tribal Council.
Your sources, David, that's very mysterious.
Yes, yes. Well, you know.
You're like Adam Schefter.
I don't know who that is.
Okay.
So Yes, my sources told me that's why all of her arguments were dismissed, because she wasn't believable in light of what the jurors already thought of her. In your interview with Hannah, she said that she felt she had not gotten full credit for everything she did. And at this point, I think we have to address a question that's already come up because Hannah herself raised it. Was Hannah penalized for being a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the reason she didn't get credit for her moves? I'd say it's a difficult question to answer. And obviously, we cannot absolutely rule out all possible influence, so it's rather complicated. And I know people like yes or no answers a lot of the time when it comes to something like this. But it is complicated, but I'm leaning on the side of no.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah noted in interviews that she may have overplayed the quirky card too much, using her goofiness to disarm people and as a shield so she wouldn't be thought of as a threat. And she may have overdone it. I mean, it was a unanimous vote, including several other strong women. I think there are other stronger arguments to be made that are more in line with the other aspects of how she was seen. And it takes me back to a time earlier this year when we wondered why Aubrey didn't get credit for the game she played. At the time, I noted that while we saw Aubrey's game, the question was whether the jurors did. And I think the same issue was in play with Hannah. But I also mentioned then, and I will reiterate now, that this isn't anything new. In fact, I'm going to temporarily jump ahead to pull out a nugget from rule number two.
Okay.
While most of that rule tells players to keep your scheming secret, there is a paragraph that warns players not to keep their scheming so secret that if you get to the finals, nobody knows you were playing the game. The most famous situation of this occurring was, of course, Steven in his original season.
Mm-hmm.
He got to the end with his game partner, JT. They had worked on strategy together pretty much the whole way through, but JT got all the credit. Even back then, at least one of the jurors told me in an interview that they didn't give Steven enough credit for the scheming and plotting he did, which they only later saw on television. More recently, again, we saw it with Aubrey. And now I feel like we've seen it with Hannah, too. Maybe I need to elevate that part of the rule to a higher status somehow. But that's why her arguments were dismissed, because they were not believable in light of what the jurors already thought of her. Hannah herself now seems to realize this fact, at least partially. And she told you that there was a balance between when to show her cards and when to hide them. She told Josh that her biggest problem was that she underestimated perception. And she added in a variety of interviews that she hid a lot of what she was doing, and some jurors thought she was just a goofball when she actually knew quite well what was going on in the game. Unfortunately for her, the person who most understood the type of game she was playing was Adam. So not only could he not go to the jury and advocate for her, but he also knew how to counterattack her in front of that same jury. By the time they got to the end, she thought she had a good argument of how she was in control of a lot of the game. But since the jurors hadn't perceived it that way, it was quite an uphill climb. As she said, if what you're doing doesn't match up with what the jury saw, you really don't have a receipt for what you're doing.
I like that.
That's her quote.
That's good.
Yeah.
The receipts. Bring the receipts.
That's right. Maybe she wants a return and, you know, a different size maybe.
Well, this time of year, you have to get the gift receipt. That's important also.
It is. It is. You know, although there are some stores where you don't need a receipt, maybe she was hoping this was one of them.
Yeah.
I think we've gone a little too far afield. So, yeah,
probably took the metaphor too far.
Another aspect of Hannah's game was that there have been many arguments about whether she should have stuck with David and Ken as long as she did. Clearly, the jury, including David himself, thought she stayed with him too long. For her part, she said that she was not going to the end with David, but she worried that if she turned on David sooner, she would lose Ken, who was key to her game and someone she wanted to take to the end. She knew it was a big risk to keep David, but she was willing to take that risk. Hannah may have been right that turning on Ken and David could have killed her chance of winning the game. I don't know. But looking back, it seems more like not turning on them killed her chances. But she didn't know that at the time due to, again, those differences in perception. She had a plan, and that plan worked. But the others didn't know it was part of her plan and looked at what she had done in quite a different light. So was Hannah's strategy dismissed because she's a woman, because she's quirky, because she was acting as David's lieutenant or goat, or a combination? Probably the latter, probably a combination. But I think the quirky face that she put on and the way she appeared to ride David's coattails probably were the biggest reasons.
You know, I don't know if it's exactly a gender issue, but I do feel like, and we've seen this with different people like Dawn Meehan specifically in Karamo and a lot of the Survivor moms, where I think where you give off the vibe that you appear weak and then people either take pity or show you compassion and give you information, and then you use that information against them. I feel like that's never really appreciated by the jury. And where I think it's not exactly a male-female thing, I think that we tend to see more women adopt that strategy. I think that if a man also did that same sort of strategy, like a Cochran in South Pacific, not Cochran in Karamoan, I think that people would be very angry with that person also in the jury.
Right, right, exactly. And I also want to say one of the reasons that some people have said Hannah's gender played a role was they were seeing what looked like some condescension towards her in the final tribal council. But as I watched final tribal council, I thought that at least one person, Chris, for example, looked a lot more condescending to Ken with the whole thing about giving credit to Adam for Ken's move.
Yeah.
You know, so once again, we have a perception issue. So, you know, moving on to Ken, he had been loyal. He hadn't played the game. So in the jury's mind, if Ken flipped on David, it clearly wasn't Ken's idea. And since the jury already had a story built up, and that story had Adam driving the bus, it fit the narrative to give him credit for that as well.
I think also Adam helped to really sell that story at the Final Four Tribal Council, where he was much more vocal about coming for David than Ken was. Ken was vocal with his vote, but he was not demonstrative at that Tribal Council at the Final Four.
Well, you know, when is Ken really ever demonstrative? I mean, I don't think it
was
surprising.
Well, send him an email with the letter U instead of Y-O-U.
or tell him that MP3s are better than vinyl.
Possibly.
But, you know, it also plays into the fact that something I've said before, Ken seemed like the least strategic person out there, and he had been for quite some time. In his own defense, even though we didn't see this stuff necessarily, he said in interviews that he brought David and Jessica and Cece and some of the others together to survive in the original Gen X tribe. He said some other things that happened that we didn't see, like, he faked injury and downplayed himself. All of these were good moves, even if they didn't make them to TV, and they were indeed strategic. But it seems like that was as far as he could go. Way back when Paul was voted out, Paul said in exit interviews that he tried to get Ken into the Guys Alliance, but Ken wouldn't really talk to them. Now, maybe Ken felt that those guys were not the type of people he wanted to partner with, but that really doesn't matter. He still should have talked to him. That is what a strategic player would have done. Coming up to, you know, again, Ken's interviews, he said he ended up flying a little too low under the radar and the jury's minds were set such that some didn't even acknowledge him. And indeed, I can't argue with that since they were giving Adam credit for Ken's decision. But I would argue that when he says he flew too low under the radar, it was actually the case that he just wasn't making moves at that point. He was standing by David and he appeared to be the loyal goat to the end right up till that last vote.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Ken did make a move, it tended to be a weird one. I mean, the most obvious example was when he outed Will's plan to the other side. He frankly got lucky that Will was so interested in making the move that even Ken blowing up his spot didn't change his mind.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I still don't understand why the hell he did that or what was going through his mind. It certainly wasn't good strategy. I don't think he ever explained it in his interviews or anything else that I saw. Did you see anything?
David, he was testing him. I mean, it's okay. Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, obviously. I should have sent you a text to write that interview question on your hand, but I didn't think about it till later.
Yeah.
So like I said, I still don't understand that. It was terrible strategy. I don't get it. Ken finally made a real game move in the last vote when he turned on David. And David told you in your interview that Ken did make the right move for his game. But I would argue with that. I think the right move for Ken's game would have been to turn on David sooner. But Ken clearly just didn't know that by the time he made that move, There was no right move for him. Essentially, by making the move at that time, Ken took $1 million away from David and gave it to Adam. Mm-hmm. Ken was the kingmaker, not because he was controlling the game strategically, but because he just fell into that position at the end and everyone had been preaching against David for so long. Mm-hmm. And why were they preaching against David? Because they knew he had been leading the charge for most of the successful strategizing throughout the season. He pulled together his group. He got them to stay solid. That began early in the game, as he told you that his biggest move was using the idol to save Jessica. It's certainly an interesting idea, and it may be his biggest single move. He said he needed to do that in order to foster a deep level of trust. And I would say it worked, since Jessica went to rocks for him. But David was clearly scheming and plotting throughout this entire game. Start to finish, David was hammering it hard. Let's look back at episode 5. David talked about how you needed to look ahead as many moves as possible. That was his plan coming in, too. One interesting thing he told Josh before playing was that the more he knows about what's going on in the game, the better he'll feel. And I think we saw that as he became the head of his alliance and knew quite a bit about what was going on, his paranoia level seemed to drop quite a bit. Another thing he told Josh before the game was he planned to make a hidden immunity idol and hide it where someone would find it, and he hoped he could watch them play it and go home. Yeah. So definite points for him on that one.
Called his shot on that one.
Right, right. And that was just very fun to watch, although maybe less so for Jay.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently, yes. Now, not everybody will agree with what I'm saying here. Now, I know that's shocking, but it is true. I have seen that some viewers thought David was getting too much credit, and they were saying his position was due to the bad play of others. But to me, if you can make other players make bad moves, that's a good move on your part. It's a key point of strategy in poker, and we even saw a lot of that in the World Series, where each manager was trying to outthink the other with pitching changes, for example.
Yeah, well, I heard from Aroldis Chapman that Joe Maddon was making some bad moves.
I did hear that too, and actually, I would agree with Chapman on that, but hey, it ended up working out, so I am not going to question Joe Maddon.
Yeah, he wasn't saying those things before the Yankees gave him a 5-year contract, though.
Right, right. Many millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But, the point is, you want to force your opposition into making wrong decisions. And David succeeded in that regard. He surrounded himself with loyal allies. They pogonged the opposition to get themselves into a better position. He came so close to making the final three using the strategy. And if he'd have made it to the end, he would have won. But going back to the other players making bad moves, there remains the question of where the bad move was. Not voting out David, when exactly? Because someone like a Hannah or a Ken would have had to turn on David basically when Zeke did, in order to get out all the people who were threats to them. While David himself was a big threat, he was able to repeatedly point to other people who were threats as well, and he used them as strategic meat shields. Brett obviously felt like David should have been voted out much sooner, or at least one vote sooner for sure. We didn't see a lot of Brett scheming and plotting, but he did make a couple good moves. We know he made a very early alliance with Chris and Sunday and some others, but those were obviously the two that lasted the longest. After Chris was voted out, Brett went right to Zeke in order to keep himself in a decent position. With that said, and I like Brett, but I feel like Brett believed he knew a lot more about the strategy that was going on than he actually did. Mm-hmm. We saw him get incredibly frustrated with people when they wouldn't work with him to vote out David. In his interview with you, he was still ranting that Hannah was wrong to keep David. But I would say she was neither stupid nor blind. She had a plan. She and Ken didn't want to vote out David yet. Brett didn't understand what they were doing, so he thought they were just dumb and not listening to reason. The fact was that neither was the case. They just had a different plan and that he didn't see, and Hannah didn't necessarily do a good job in explaining that plan. Mm-hmm. So he thought he had good ideas, but he didn't see what the other players were doing. So that's where he ended up with this rule. Moving to Jay, we have another player who knew he needed to work strategically and play hard. In the early goings, he did just that, bouncing in the first vote between Zeke and the Triforce, keeping various relationships open. he had a web confessional way back in the second episode where he said he was messing with people to put targets on others, so his name never came up. Later, he dispatched Michaela because he felt like it was a necessary move. He held on to his idol through multiple votes when many other people would have gotten nervous and played it. But he read the room correctly. Jay was a target for so long, but somehow just kept making it through vote after vote. He dodged and weaved to the point that many viewers thought he would make it all the way. And he did that in large part by creating relationships with people. One reason he was able to work well with Will was that we saw him discussing who to target with Will rather than just telling him like some of the others did. And I think that was indicative of his game, gaining trust and working with people. It also helped that, as Michelle told Josh when she was voted out, Jay is a wonderful liar. She heard him lie at times and she knew it was a lie, but thought if she was the person on the other end of that lie, she would have believed him. In the end, though, Jay ran out of room and also fell for David's fake immunity idol, which resulted in the epic departure from Tribal Council. Now, that was a lot to discuss, but that's not surprising because I said earlier that this jury and most of the players throughout the season values strategic playing above everything else. So, as I had mentioned, I expected that to take a while, but I am ready to move on to the second rule.
Is that all, David?
Yeah, that's all, unless you have something to add.
Yeah, well, let's talk about who was scheming and plotting too much then.
Okay. Now, of course, besides scheming and plotting too much, another portion of this rule says you have to keep your scheming secret and don't backstab too soon. Now, we already discussed that Hannah did the opposite and kept her scheming a little too secret. I would say that the one who did the most spilling of secrets was probably Adam. He told Taylor about the reward steal advantage. He told Hannah about finding his last immunity idol. He told Jay some of his plans. He told David his plans, and so on. At one point, a lot of viewers thought that Adam had overplayed to the point that he was going to be voted out, especially after his talk with Jay in the water when Jay came back seemingly angry.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, this could really come back to haunt a player, but Adam not only was able to work around it, he actually found a way to turn it to his advantage. The other players seemed to generally appreciate that he was being so honest. David, for one, was impressed that Adam told David he was gunning for him, and then he did exactly that. There was no fear of backstabbing too soon because Adam was stabbing him right in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, I thought that David would have a problem with this rule because of the way he ran around to various different people, telling them all he trusted them and wanted to work with them. But he calmed down in time and pulled it all together, so it certainly was not a reason he was voted out. However, one part of this rule does say that in cases where alliances are out in the open, you should not let it be known that you are the decision maker. David was clearly the head of his group, while Adam stayed more in the shadows. We always hear opponents talking about wanting to chop off the head of the snake, but nobody ever says, let's cut off this middle part of the snake.
Which I do believe would kill a snake. I mean, I'm not a biologist or anything like that.
It probably would, but you know that that head might flop around a little bit and bite you first.
I guess so. But I mean, if you cut it off, it could still do the same thing, right?
Well, we'll leave that to our snake experts.
Yeah.
But the point is, even if it would kill the snake, nobody ever talks about it. They always go for the headshot.
Yeah.
And so from Adam's point of view, letting the head get the knife is a much better plan than being the head.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a place where David perhaps should not have allowed himself to stand out quite as much, while Adam did fade into the background. I should mention that this rule specifically says not to backstab until you need to. And I did mention that at the top of the rule. We spent quite a bit of time already discussing when Hannah and Ken needed to backstab David. They thought it was right at the end. The jury thought it was at least one vote sooner, if not more than one vote. It's a hard decision to make. And it's possible that Hannah and Ken might not have ever even made it to the end, as we discussed earlier, if they had backstabbed sooner. But again, Hannah was also fighting an image problem that had been created back when Zeke flipped against David. We already know that Zeke had vilified her in order to get his alliance to go to rocks for him. We heard about this before. And I think a lot of that stuck even into the jury. She was called a flipper, even though Zeke had been the one who flipped back then. And Zeke pounded into his alliance at the time that she was not trustworthy, because that's what he needed to do in order to get to the rocks and save himself in that vote. I feel like Hannah got tarred by that brush and she just couldn't shake it, even going to the jury. So that is one more thing to tack on to what we already discussed. And that's one area where she was looked at as having schemed and plotted too much, whether she truly had or not.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, for the rest of the final six that I haven't mentioned, not a whole lot really had anything to do with this rule. So we don't even need to mention them any further.
So then, David, rule number three is to be flexible. So of this final six, who was flexible and who was not?
You know, once again, some of the key players here are Hannah and Ken. Did they follow this rule? After all, a very important warning in this rule is that you cannot simply tie yourself to one alliance and hope that it survives. And that's exactly what most of the jurors accuse these two of doing. The question we have to answer is whether it's true. For Ken, yeah, I'd say the answer is yes. He wanted to play a loyal game, so he hooked in with David and was going to the end, or at least almost the end, period. But we've already discussed that Hannah going to the end with David was a calculated risk, not necessarily a fault. The rule even says that sometimes staying with a single alliance is the right thing to do if you can make it work. She believed she was making it work. Her problem, again, was the jurors thought she had done what the next sentence of this rule said. You can't just latch on and pray, though sometimes that's the best way to make sure you get second or third place if you're dragged along. Once again, it comes back to perception. Hannah thought she was okay here. The jurors did not think she was okay. I would also say that Hannah at least followed the part of the rule that says to keep your finger on the pulse of every tribe member and make sure you're a part of the majority. We've already talked about how even people outside her alliance liked to tell Hannah what was going on. And she was on the right side of every vote except one. That's pretty impressive, even if most of the jurors didn't think so. Adam was more openly impressive about his flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned that while he was part of the core alliance, he also reached out to others, including his secret alliance with Brett, the discussions he had with Jay, the deal he made with Taylor, and so on. He was also willing to let others push their ideas as long as it didn't interfere with his own, such as when Hannah really wanted Sunday gone. Even though he wasn't thrilled with the idea, he stepped back and let it happen so as to avoid an unnecessary fight. Most importantly to the jurors, he was willing to turn on the alliance sooner than Hannah or Ken, which earned him huge points. As for David and Jay, I'd say both were also flexible, especially in the early going. Jay needed to stay flexible in order to stick around as long as he did, while David needed to push the idea of inflexibility among his allies. But both knew what they were doing. And, you know, throwing Brett in too, he also was as flexible as he could be, although he was often on the losing side of the vote and found that he had to bounce around. And we talked about that already, such as when he immediately went to Zeke after Chris was voted out. So as much as he, you know, might have that image of being the rigid guy yelling at the kids to get off his lawn, he really was flexible in the game.
All right, David, you say that rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Now, we have a very emotional winner of the game. Was this a violation?
No, I'd say it was a huge success, actually, because you know, this rule normally talks about in-game emotions like friendship or anger. But, of course, what we're talking about here is Adam, who had quite another issue, and he had the most weighing on him in this regard. Survivor is a stressful game under the best of circumstances, and Adam was playing it under the worst of circumstances. But instead of letting those emotions get to him, he turned them into fuel to keep his competitive fires burning. Adam went in with a strategy to let some things out emotionally in confessionals, which he later said helped explain why he was crying in them so much. The fact that he was able to pull that off and just focus on the game during the rest of the time is quite honestly somewhat amazing to me. Because there was another player who went in with the idea of using confessionals as emotional vents. And he was less successful. I'm talking about David, who planned to vent his anxiety in private and hide it from others. Obviously, he was not terribly successful in that regard. And I think his plan may have lasted until all of maybe 2 minutes after they arrived at camp. While David did eventually gain more control of his emotions, they still came out from time to time, such as when he tried to withdraw from a reward challenge that involved swimming and ended up crying. Mm-hmm. But in his case, his open show of emotions ended up drawing people more towards him and making him more likable. The others generally did well playing mostly unemotional games. Sure, Hannah had her panic attacks, but I don't know that I'd call that an emotion per se. And, you know, Brett occasionally did get fed up with people, but not to the point of it impacting his game. So I think we're good to go with this rule. The biggest takeaway is obviously Adam. He was in control of his emotions. And other than a very few times, no one out there would have ever known what he was going through.
Yeah. And it's a testament to him to be able to have this thing that has got to be occupying such a large percentage of your headspace under the best of circumstances. And then you have these people that you're with for 39 days. And I can't ever emphasize how boring it is on Survivor. And you have heard and told every single story there is from these people. To have something that's so present in your thoughts and not talk about it with these people is just absolutely phenomenal. So it's such a credit to his dedication to being present in the game the whole time and not having a moment of weakness where he just like blurted it out to the whole tribe that was something he was going, other than that moment with Jay on the show.
Right. And I mean, two things come to mind with that. One, with the Jay thing, it wasn't something he just blurted out. He had thought through it. Mm-hmm. He knew that Jay had some similar family circumstances going on, and he knew that Jay would not use it against him. So that, you know, very important. The other thing that's interesting is so many viewers didn't realize Adam hadn't told everyone. They just assumed everyone knew. And I think that's because, of course, he was going to have to tell them. How did he not tell them? Everyone just figured he did until it became a plot point that he hadn't. And then everyone was like, wow, okay, I guess he hadn't. I had forgotten that. It because, like you said, it would just be so natural for him to tell them under normal circumstances. So, like you said, huge props to him for keeping that private.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, David, then rule number 5 is pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. I mean, in the case of Adam, I don't know if he was pretending to be nice. He just seems like an incredibly nice person.
Right, exactly. And, you know, not only was he keeping his own emotions in check, he knew he had to connect with people on a human level. He knew that it couldn't be all strategy. He had seen some previous players who went in there and just did all strategy and didn't connect that way. So he wanted to correct that for himself, and he made friends. You know, we saw his friendship with Jay later in the game. He also had solid connections with Brett, Taylor, Hannah, David, and especially Jessica, which we never saw. You know, we wondered, why was he taking it so hard when she got rocked out of the game? Well, because they were very close. We just hadn't seen it. In the Jury Speaks videos, I already mentioned that the jurors talked about Adam's ability to play the game. But another factor involved the relationships that Adam had made. So, for example, Brett said Adam was a really nice person. That wasn't the key reason that they all voted for him, but it also wasn't a reason to vote against him, which can often be at least as important. Really, none of the final three had particular problems with this rule because they were all likable to at least some extent. Hannah said in a web confessional back in the second episode that a big part of her game was really getting to know people. But those relationships made playing the game difficult. And, you know, really that was to be the situation for her for the rest of the game. She had a good social game until she cut people. And then it came to what you had brought up earlier. People left the game feeling more betrayed by her than by almost anyone else. She built a lot of deep relationships, and when she turned on them, it felt more personal and less strategic than when someone like an Adam or a David did it. We heard that from Hannah herself, and also in a number of earlier interviews, from Mari to Michelle to Zeke to Sunday. It just kept happening. And so, you know, you were absolutely right to bring it up earlier. she fell into this mold for whatever reason. Ken, he might not have seemed overly social, but I'd say he did what was necessary here. So, for example, he knew this was a game, even if he wasn't strategizing a whole lot. He told us in a web confessional in episode 10 that there were times he wouldn't speak his mind, even when someone deserved it, because he knew it was a social game. So even if he maybe wasn't always as outwardly friendly, I guess, as Adam and Hannah, at least he wasn't telling people they were wrong all the time, because he knew that he had to keep that social game going. Of course, moving on to those outside the final three, David made genuine connections with players from all sides of the aisle. So even though, for example, he had almost never worked with Brett, Brett considered him to be so much of a friend that Brett said in an interview that he worried he may have cost his friend $1 million by harping so much on the fact that David was a threat. While David was obviously considered a huge threat due to strategic reasons, I would say part of the reason that he was a threat was also due to his social game, which I think rather surprised David, who was not used to being such a successful social butterfly. As for Brett himself, he was very well-liked and had a great social game. In fact, he believes that if he had gotten to the end without David or Jay, he would have won because of his relationships in the jury. Zeke told Josh in their interview that Brett was a great guy who was perhaps not strategically super savvy, but he understood the personal dynamics and was playing a good game. Brett said in interviews that if he played again, he wouldn't change anything because the social game is so important. Now, personally, I'm not sure I would go so far as to agree that he shouldn't change anything, but yes, he was a very good social player. And then moving to Jay, he definitely had some sort of serious charisma out there, as he was able to draw in everyone from Hannah to Sunday to Will. A large part of the threat he posed was, like David, based on the social bonds he made. So overall, none of these final six players did anything wrong in terms of this rule, and most of them succeeded quite well, which may be why people have been talking about this group as being just so likable, because they were.
David, rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. I think that this was something that Adam did exceptionally well and something that both Jay and David ultimately succumbed to.
You're right. You're right. And as I've said for the past couple of weeks, we saw big threat after big threat after big threat leave the game this season. That certainly continued into the finale as, like you said, Jay and David were knocked out before the final three. I mean, even Brett was elevated as it became clear in the finale that at least some of the remaining players considered him to be a threat at the end because he had friends on the jury, like I mentioned earlier. Although I do think that a big part of that was David trying to deflect attention away from himself. And of course, Brett was the final pogonging victim, even as Adam tried to put a stop to it before it was complete. Now, one part of being a big threat for a number of these players, or I should say one part of what would normally have been being a big threat for most of these players, is something that went out the window this season. And that is the part of this rule saying you shouldn't let on that you know all about Survivor. Even David thought ahead of time that he would hide his knowledge of the game until he realized that in this season, almost everyone was a huge fan. So you had a season where knowing about the previous players, knowing about podcasts, knowing about the evolution of strategy, all of that was not a threat. It was just something many of them did. And that was a big change. So that part was eliminated. That part of the being a threat was eliminated. But that didn't mean that David was not still a huge threat. So huge that everyone was talking about it and had been for quite a while. As he said when you interviewed him, he related a lot to, well, you, as he was voted out for being too much of a threat just before the final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
David said in a web confessional from episode 10 that he realized others saw him as a threat and knew that because of this, people would be coming for him. The question then should have been, you're in the mind of David, what can I do about it? From what we saw, his answer to that was he kept pushing loyalty and allegiance and hoping that would get him through the next tribal council. It almost worked all the way. But as I mentioned earlier, everyone had been talking about David being a threat for so long that eventually even Ken had to acknowledge it and turn on him. But for Ken, there was another threat that he clearly didn't see, and that was Adam. Because Adam, as we discussed, and as you just mentioned, did a good job of keeping a low profile. So I'm sure when Ken turned on David, he never expected to run into a brick wall named Adam when it came to the final vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could see that in his post-game interviews. There was no way he expected a shutout there.
Yeah.
Adam seemed to know when to duck into the shadows. While there had been a time when too much negative attention was focused on him, he stepped back when the David and Zeke war broke out and let the two of them draw all that attention. Better to let people focus on those threats than on him. He specifically laid out that plan at Final Tribal Council, saying he made sure there were three people who were bigger threats than he was when it was at the final six. He knew, and even said in interviews, that if he went to the end against Jay or David, he would lose almost 100% of the time. So really, Adam took somewhat the same risk Hannah did, but he tried to be more careful about it and not have it go down to the absolute final vote. But at the same time, Adam had made himself into enough of a non-threat that Hannah said in interviews that at one point, a number of people wanted to face him in the final three. Obviously herself, Will, Zeke. So Hannah, and more importantly, Ken, didn't worry about facing off against Adam in the same way that they feared facing David, though clearly they should have. And it is interesting to think about if Ken had realized that Adam posed the same threat to him as David, would Ken have just stayed loyal and said, well, you know, I'm getting second or third no matter what. I might as well give the win to my friend David. But because Adam was able to hide that, he was able to get to that final three and win.
David, rule 7, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Did the players bring it home by voting out the strong at the end?
Yes. And you know, obviously by the time it came to the final three, this rule didn't matter, but it did play a big role in getting to that part. When we last checked in, there were still two members of the opposing alliance left, and both of them were considered to be pretty strong in game terms. The first one out was Jay, clearly a very strong player. The next was Brett, the final member of the opposition. Adam didn't want that to happen, but the rest of the tribe did. Should they have targeted David at that point instead? From the point of view of this rule alone, I would say that David should have been voted out first. The rule says that at that point in the game, they should have been focused on the members of their own alliance who threatened their chance at the end, with one potential reason being that they are popular with the future jury. The argument was made that Brett was popular with the jury as well, but I'd say David was clearly the stronger opponent here. However, this rule also notes that voting this way may not be an easy task, because the fact that this player may be popular with the jury could mean they're popular with the rest of their alliance. And that's exactly what happened in this case. In the end, the key point mentioned by this rule is that you want to be better thought of than the people left with you in the final three. This may seem obvious, but how many times have we seen this not to be the case? I'd say that it even applies here, because Hannah made comments about how she had the final three she wanted. Once again, we go back to the perception issue. The perception of the jury was that they should have voted out the strong David sooner, and that came back to bite both Hannah and Ken.
All right, you ready to talk appendices? Because these are important this time.
They are, well, they're always important, but they're more important.
They're not always important, but they're important today.
Yes, they definitely are important today.
Okay. Part one, do whatever it takes to get idols. Our winner certainly did that. He found idols. He found advantages. He found one when he needed it most. Very important appendix.
Yes. And, you know, idols clearly played a huge role this season. A number of players did whatever they needed to in order to get an idol, with, you know, mostly David, Adam, and Jay playing those roles. That left the question of what to do when they did get them. As we discussed earlier, David used his first idol to save Jessica and create a solid ally. He used his second to try to protect his most loyal ally, though that didn't exactly work out. Adam had a similar situation when he played it to save Hannah, only to find that, well, Hannah didn't need saving. And then he played it in the finale, but had given away too much information to Hannah, and the vote switched, so he wasn't the target. However, just the fact that he had it there may have saved his bacon, so finding it was obviously crucial. Jay thought he had saved himself after finding an idol at the end, But of course, it turned out to have been David's fake. And we already talked about how well he played in holding on to his original idol and realizing he didn't need it until, of course, he did play it when he still didn't need it, but Adam had convinced him otherwise. Could players have done a better job with the idols? Sure, I guess so. But their willingness to put them into play showed that none of them was interested in going home with an idol in their pocket, which may be the most important part of this appendix, next to the encouragement to actually get an idol. So I commend all of them for that.
David, in the second appendix is the final tribal council, which Adam swept. Certainly, he nailed this part.
Exactly. And, you know, one key piece of advice from this appendix is to seed the jury ahead of time with as many people who will vote for you as possible. Adam had made so many good relationships along the way that even when he helped send those people packing, they still favored him. What was even better was that Adam had a different opinion of the jury than some of his opponents did. So, for example, he told Josh that everyone thought Taylor hated him because of the tribal council blow up between the two of them. But Adam correctly pointed out that Adam didn't give away Taylor's secret. Taylor gave away Adam's. So there was no reason to think that Taylor really was mad at Adam. He also had a much better relationship with Jay and Brett than most people knew. Adam was able to reach across that aisle and maintain good relationships when the other players didn't even know about it. This meant he could avoid being tagged as a threat in front of the jury while still having a good idea that those people in the jury would vote for him to win, especially against the people he was facing. And indeed, that is the next piece of advice from this appendix. Bring along a goat or two. Bring along the people you can beat. Personally, I would argue that Ken was the goat and Hannah was the other one that Adam knew he could beat. But however you categorize them, Adam said in a web confessional and in later interviews that he was going to the final three with the exact people he wanted to face. Much of the rest of this appendix deals with how to act and what to say at final tribal council. But here's the thing. We've already determined that it almost didn't matter what happened here because the jury had mostly made up their minds. In the Jury Speaks videos, Brett started right off by saying there was one person who worked hard to get where he's at and two who did nothing to get where they're at. He said Hannah and Ken were just brought along to be beatable. Taylor said Hannah was the goat who everyone wants to take to the end. She's a good person, but all of us, I think, would agree that we would take Hannah to the end. She just went with the numbers and she got through. Ken is extremely loyal. He has zero strategic game. Sunday didn't like how Ken and Hannah played the game and did like how Adam played and said flat out that Hannah couldn't say anything to convince Sunday to give her the vote. Jay said he pretty much had his vote set. Michelle was 90% sure she'd vote for Adam unless Hannah came up with a crazy good speech. Zeke and David both appeared willing to listen, but they were clearly already leaning toward Adam and definitely were not voting for Ken. And Zeke and Chris both anticipated what Hannah would likely argue, but when she did, they still didn't seem all that impressed by it. And indeed, many people watching, myself included at the time, thought Hannah was doing well in her jury argument. Steven said on Twitter that Hannah made a very powerful case for her decisions and her ability to make them happen. I thought, from what we saw, that she had some good counterarguments against Adam. I wondered at the time if the vote might be a close one, though I did feel that Chris's speech indicated Adam was going to win. While Hannah made good arguments about being behind getting each of them sent to the jury, the problem was simply that the jury didn't believe her, as we discussed earlier. Meanwhile, as Adam told Josh, he was able to articulate to the jury why he made each move. While Adam was able to both explain it and show the jury how it worked out, Hannah was only able to tell because she never showed them. Adam argued that of those three, he played the best game. He put himself in a position to not be the person going home and to keep the people safe who he wanted to go to the end with. Probably most importantly, he didn't say anything to change the minds of the jury in the other direction once he got to that final three. So that brings us to the end of the rules. And time to sum up, you know, the finale, the season, and what all happened. Before I do that, one thing I want to address here is something about the way Ken played. Because you'll notice I didn't mention Ken when I talked about the jury arguments.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was getting annoyed at the many people saying Ken embodied the old school Survivor player. Because Richard Hatch was the old school Survivor player, and he was the original Snake. But then I realized there were some ways in which Ken did take us back to those olden days. Ken told us he's a firm believer that players on Survivor should be able to start and maintain a fire, get some protein through fishing or getting snails or clams or whatever. And he needed to see that to respect another player. Zeke noted in his Jury Speaks video that Ken catching fish and providing was a very old school criteria for Survivor. And to that extent, he's right. As a matter of fact, it's so old school that it used to be in my rules, but I took it out because it became unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Ken only saw the older version of the rules that was still on vinyl. He did not see the digital upgrade. But this result justifies my having taken it out. Being a food provider can certainly give you an in to a better relationship, but fishing by itself doesn't earn you $1 million. As David said in his Jury Speaks video, Ken was just not familiar with the game and did not play strategically at all. He caught food and cooked, but wasn't playing the game. He continued, "You don't get the title of sole survivor because you brought us some fish." I couldn't have said it better myself.
What about if it's Sir Squiddington? That's not just any fish.
That's true. That's true.
Is a squid a fish? I'm not even sure if that's technically correct.
No, a squid is not a fish. He needed to bring Sir Strategic some. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Okay. All right, David, but let's get back to Adam.
Yeah. Well, with Ken out of the way, the vote really came down to two people. But before I dig into our concluding thoughts, I do also want to address one more elephant in the room. You mentioned on the voicemail show with Josh, and in fact, you mentioned it again at the top of this podcast, that you had heard some rumblings that Adam only won because of what he was going through with his mom, and because he brought that up at the end of Final Tribal Council. You also recounted on the voicemail show how we heard similar things about Jeremy two seasons ago with his baby on the way story. And yes, I've already had people tell me the same thing on Twitter, though, interestingly, not as many as when it was Jeremy. I said it then, I'll say it now. That did not play into the reasons for Adam winning.
Mm-hmm.
What did play into it was strategy. That aspect of the game was clearly the most important factor in every juror's vote. We don't have to guess at it. They flat out told us in their Jury Speaks videos, juror after juror after juror. But we also have to remember that they weren't deciding whether Adam was the best overall strategic player in the season. They were deciding whether he was the best of the final three. I'm not saying this to take away anything from him, but to point out that there is more to the answer than just going by the Jury Speaks videos. Adam had to get to this point first. That meant he had to have a plan, or really multiple plans. He had to make his moves, some of which succeeded and some of which didn't. When he got knocked down, he had to brush himself off and get moving again. He had to stay loyal when it was appropriate and break ranks when it was necessary late in the game. He had to make social bonds, both within his own group and reaching out to those on the other side. He had to get out the bigger threats. He had to show everyone what he was doing. That last point, of course, was key. Hannah was making moves. Hannah had plenty of friendships. But as Zeke said in his Jury Speaks video, they saw Adam's game very visibly, but not Hannah's. In their eyes, she was not the one directing the votes, but rather riding on David's coattails and hoping for the best. During Second Chances, we saw Tasha and Spencer apparently doing the same thing, and we couldn't understand why they were doing it at the time. I believe these jurors felt the same way, both when they were still in the game and then when they were watching from the jury box. But Adam stepped outside of that group and made visible moves to take out the threats. He had set himself up for this by making moves earlier, ducking down when he needed to, and playing an overall strategic game while also performing the balancing act of maintaining good relationships. You know how much I like the sound clip of Michelle yelling, "David, you're right."
Mm-hmm.
But there should have also been someone saying, "Adam, you're right."
Mm-hmm.
Because he made so many correct moves to put himself into the perfect position that he was even credited with the moves made by other people. And that is why Adam won, while everyone else this season got a participation trophy.
Oh, David, you were on such a nice roll and you had to go back to the participation trophy.
Well, I was surprised that Jeff Probst didn't hand them out to everybody during the reunion.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that was what the puzzle was. I thought that was beneath them to stoop to that as the answer to the puzzle.
Well, you know, he had to bring up the theme one more time.
They're so much better than that. They didn't need to do that. But yes, great job. And I hope that you have at least done a public service for anybody who thought that the reason why Adam won was because of this story about his mom. Just they're missing the point, because while certainly that was an important part of his story, it was not the deciding factor.
Right. And, you know, like I said, just to, you know, repeat this point one more time. The jury had made up their mind long before they heard that.
Okay.
So there was no way that could have convinced them, because they already knew how they were going to vote in large part.
All right, David. Well, outstanding job all season long. Are you excited about the Game Changers?
I am. You know, some more than others, obviously. Some may have changed the game more than others did. Don't want to spoil anything for anyone who doesn't know who's playing, but, you know, maybe not all of them were as game changing as the ones we immediately think about, but still, I think it will be a fun season. I'm real happy to see some of the players back. Some I could have done without, but you know, I'll keep an open mind and see what they bring to the table this time.
Okay, fair enough. David, do you have a hashtag for why Adam won?
Well, you know, with the way I kept making you play that sound clip, David, you're right. And I think it's only fair to turn it over to the winner this time and say, Adam, you're right.
Adam, you're right. Okay. Well, David, once again, fantastic job all season long. I think that everybody that listens to this show greatly appreciates all of the work that you do to prepare each week to come on and talk about all of this. So for everybody who cannot say thank you, David, I will say it for them, even though I can barely speak.
Even you can barely say it.
Yes, I can barely say it as well.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it. So I hope others do as well.
Do you have any big plans for the off season?
Well, I'm going to watch Hunted, of course.
Yes. Well, obviously.
Yes. Yes. Catch up on other shows. I am woefully behind in some of my other shows and the associated podcast.
And David, since I'm at a diminished capacity today, let's leave it there. So, David, anything else?
Nope. That about does it. Looking forward to, like I had said, next season, and also looking forward to the inevitable podcast that you will do long form with some of the players from this season, because I think they will have a lot of fun stories to tell.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And again, to those of you with your last minute holiday shopping, we still greatly appreciate you using our link, robisawebsite.com/Amazon or robisawebsite.com/AmazonCA. For our friends in Canada, have a good one. Take care, everybody. Bye.